Welcome to the Kawartha Small Business Podcast, where we believe the Kawarthas can be the most thriving region in Canada for small business. I'm Brian Rump from Profit Coach.
And I'm Matt Garrity from Matty G Digital.
And we are recording from the Thrive Podcast Studio at Thrive Coworking Community at 18 Kent Street West in downtown Lindsay, Ontario. And today we have with us from Texas, Jennifer Homema, which I hope I pronounced right. And Jennifer is someone I met through Business Made Simple and has moved from large corporate work to owning her own small business. And I will let you introduce yourself a little bit. So tell us about yourself.
So hi, everybody from Texas. I'm in Houston, Texas, and I am the owner of two small businesses. I am Jennifer Homema, but I will answer to Homema or Homema or Homema, whichever one sounds good. I answer to all of those. About a year and a half ago, I left a large energy company to pursue some personal passions, and I have been building up a real estate business where I flip houses to rentals and became a small business coach. And this has been probably the most satisfying phase of my life. I'm really excited to be where I'm at now, helping people like you thrive.
That's awesome.
Why has it been so satisfying?
Well, working in large corporate, a corporate organization, you find that you have amazing ideas and you see things that other people don't see, but implementation is crowded by red tape or bureaucracy or just fear. And when you work with small business owners, these are innovative, risk-taking, creative people. And I love that energy. So what I can often help people with is sort of the structure scaled down from large corporate America that helps you meet your goals, build your metrics, track your metrics. But we make real change in real time. I started in academia and decided not to go into academia because I felt this time scale was too long. Went to corporate America, and I still feel like the time scale is too long. So now I'm working with small business owners to create change quickly sustainably.
I hate working with big businesses. I hate working with corporations and enterprises. I worked with them a little bit when I first started in a marketing agency, and everything just felt like a make work project, like you were saying.
Yeah, the people are so awesome. You will meet absolutely amazing people in there with fantastic ideas, but they become stifled by bureaucracy and sort of the past expectations or how we did it before. So it's really, really been just downright fun to work with small business owners who have the energy and that creativity and excitement to say, well, let's make a real change and let's do it now.
That's awesome. What kind of small businesses have you been working with?
Well, because I started a business, and I actually started that business about a decade ago, I've always been interested. I studied architecture before engineering, and I'd always been interested in working on houses. It's something I've done as volunteer work. So I started buying properties to put into the rental market. And then I started getting more leads in that space. And I've had several contracts with folks helping them out that are in some type of contracting to the real estate business or developers or actual like painters and all different types of small businesses. And that's just been sort of by proximity. I've also worked a lot with people who want to leave corporate America. My company is called Strategic Pivot. So it's intentionally planning a change and making it stick. So you've got to, that can happen in life. It can happen in business. But at some point you're like, I need to change my direction. This isn't what I love anymore. It's sort of what I did. I'm like, wow, I've got everything I wanted to get out of my corporate experience, but I really want to apply it in a different way. How do I pivot into that space? And so I also work with individuals who are looking for a pivot in their, we'll call it life/business, because many of them are small business owners.
That's the thing that weirdly, maybe my wife says she admires most about me, the fact that I will take risks with businesses where a lot of people will have ideas or be unhappy in their life, but not do anything about it. And I didn't realize till she kind of kept patting me on the back or patting me on the head about it that like it's not something that everyone has as a skill set. I don't know if it's a skill or what you would call it, but.
Yeah, I think you're right. Often people will approach me and they know in their mind they want to change something. they want to take a big risk at work. I had a client who wanted to build her own job within a large scale corporation. She knew exactly what she wanted to do, and she really believed that the company needed that work done. But she was hesitant to, as you said, take a bit of that risk. So working together, we strategically created a plan. We understand. So I have a strong background in risk management from working in the energy industry and working offshore. So I can see all those things that might happen. So we look at all the things that might happen, and we figure out how to make a well-planned pivot to what you're trying to get to. And that has been amazing, because she put this proposal forward and it worked, and she's doing that job now, and she actually loves her life in corporate America. So there are people that find exactly what they want, even within a large scale corporation. But for me, this has been the most amazing part of my life so far.
Why do you think that you're so good at helping people strategically pivot? How did that come about?
Well, I think I actually, when I look back, I came up with the idea for the name of the company a couple years ago when I was actually, I was confined to bed. I had an injury, and the injury made me so weak and went undiagnosed for several years, and I was actually confined to bed. And I think in that moment, I realized that I needed to make a change. And then I look back over my life and I said, when I make change, I'm very intentional about it. I lay out the options. I lay out the potential consequences. I lay out the likelihood of all the risks that could happen, the outcomes that could happen. And I built sort of a multi-year plan to get to the point that I'm at now. And so I think doing that for myself made me understand what it feels like for someone to do it for themselves. But for about a decade, I'd been doing that work in corporate America, building like 30-year plans for business groups or for like a country strategy, you would call it. So how is a company going to operate in a country over the long term? So it's sort of a merging of those two experiences that led me to want to do it for small business owners and individuals. But I think my background has made me well prepared. Being an engineer, you think a lot about processes and structure. And then when you study risk management, you start to understand how things interplay with each other. So you can avoid the biggest risks, and then you sort of figure out, I call it people's risk threshold. How much risk can my client take? And maybe we have to go slower, accepting that risk and building up confidence that you're moving in the right path. And other people, they're ready to go. Once they see it, they're like, I can handle that. We've got enough risk managed. Let's go for it. So it's a merging of what I've done all my life that's led me to this.
Yeah, it's really cool. Let's just briefly tell the people where you worked. We'll say the name. I think shy about it, but it was ExxonMobil.
Correct. Yes.
The 30-year strategic plans you talk about is literally the oil and gas production in Nigeria.
Yeah, my most recent assignment. Yes.
You know, it's one of those things when we look at it, like, that's a major job. That's a lot of risk. What surprised me a little bit about that is, you know, even though it's large corporate America, big bureaucracies, you know, you've told me how you worked in a pretty small team of sort of experts who I'm just amazed at sort of how few people are sort of involved in, you know, doing some of that and some of those decisions. So maybe, yeah, tell us a little bit about sort of that and how you worked.
So in a large corporation, when you build a strategic plan, we'd start with figuring out, again, it's about risk. Where are the largest risks to our profitability? And then we also looked, because I was in oil and gas, where are the largest risks to the environment, our long-term integrity? Once you've identified where the biggest risks to maintaining your profitability are, you come back down and work through, how do I manage those risks in the long term? You start to link them. Some of them, you can easily see the linkage. Some require different expertises. At a large corporation, you can pull people in from all over the world who are experts in flow line corrosion and the longevity of a flow line. You could bring an expert in on how often are you going to need to come back and work on your wells to maintain the current productivity. These are all techie words. Sorry, this is my old space, but I'll try to keep it as obvious as I can. And you bring those experts in and you just have to make a forecast. And this is where it's very interesting to work with an expert in corporations. They're very afraid to forecast something that long, because you, as you look further out in the future, you see more uncertainty. But I'm someone who's not really afraid of uncertainty. I think once you accept uncertainty, you try to look at how much uncertainty you're saddled with, you can still make good choices. And then, like I said, a pivot is an intentional plan. So you're like, I'm at this place and I've got 20% of my flow lines need to be replaced. This is how much it's going to cost. How do I stage them in a way that manages their risks and brings my desired profitability without creating additional risk for the environment? So you work through that process and lay that out over the long term. But we often struggle the further we go to forecast it. But here's the deal. If you're willing to put a 10-year plan on paper, you will be amazed at what you can actually accomplish. If you saddle that with an accountability partner, say you're a small business owner, you write a 10-year plan, you need someone who's checking in on you on your 10-year plan, or you do it internally and you have a plan, a process for stewardship. When you start to actually measure and monitor what you're trying to achieve, there's a lot of research that shows you can actually do it. And I found one of the pieces, there's a little piece of paper that's really inspired me. About 3 years ago, I was in a team building workshop and we wrote a bucket list of 7 things we wanted to do. And I barely remember this exercise, but when I was unpacking all my things after I left ExxonMobil, I found this piece of paper. I had done 5 of those 7 things, and I don't remember writing them down until I saw that piece of paper. So there's something real that happens in your mind when you commit to something and you physically write it down on a piece of paper. So building a multi-year plan is worth it because you will find that you are slowly making the tweaks necessary to get to that plan success.
That's awesome. I recently had a similar experience looking through an old journal and things I wrote down, and I was like, oh, some of these things were sort of disasters that I don't want to do anymore. And then other were like things I've done, I did. So it's really neat when you actually take the time to write things down. This is our tag teaming on that to make him write stuff down.
Well, like I write stuff down. And to Brian's point too, 2 Octobers ago, him and I sat down and I wrote down a bunch of goals, and I think I'm really good at process. So like my mind is like, okay, I want to be here, but here are the things I need to do to get there. So I wrote all those out, and then I typed them out, and then I put them also in a project management software. And then last year was a real challenge. And at the end of last year, like a month ago, 2 months ago, I was like, I didn't accomplish anything. And this year was terrible. And I looked though back at all the things I wrote down. I accomplished almost 3/4 of them. Like I got it.
Well done.
I didn't think that I did. In my head, I'm like, man, this has been a nightmare year. But in actuality, like I did a lot, and I did a lot of stuff. Brian tells me this, so I'm not just trying to pat myself on the back, but maybe I should let him say it. But he's like, he'll often say, I did more last year than a lot of business owners will do in an entire year of things that I've done and kind of accomplished and launched last year. So,
Something neurologically that happens when we write something down. And then, like you said, you reinforce it by typing it. And whether you know it or not, Brian's your accountability partner. So his presence triggers something in your mind that says, hey, I'm supposed to be working on the following things. And now I will say that, you know, sometimes you have to change your dreams and your plans, so you aren't going to accomplish 100%, but you can get to those goals.
Oh, definitely. I think, one of the things you talked about is that, you take the plan, you write it down. I like the analogy of sort of the oil well. And I'm going to, in a few moments, ask you sort of how people are like oil wells as well. But, when you talked about the pipes and, having to replace everything, but not necessarily doing it all right now, but managing that sort of risk and profitability to like take those steps of, maybe we do 20% a year for 5 years. And I really think for so many business owners, that is a sort of paradigm shift you have to make where it's patience, but you're not waiting for 5 years to do all of them. you know, you're starting and doing, you know, 20% now. So it's letting go of having to do 100% now, but then not also getting in the trap of waiting forever to do it all. So, you know, dig in maybe a little bit more on that and, you know, talk to us about, you know, how we're oil wells.
Yeah. So in my technical expertise before I moved into business planning and stewardship for Exxon, a lot of what I worked on was oil wells. And so there's, you plan for an oil well, you drill an oil well, you operate an oil well, and at the end of its life, you abandon an oil well. So they have what's called like a lifetime. So you have to manage the lifetime of the oil well. So Matt mentioned project management earlier. So it's project management, or you could think of it as even like a human life, right? There's like, we sometimes talk about managing a well from cradle to grave. So all of that is important, but I think one of the things that we often forget is, I'm just going to use word maintenance, and I think people will relate to that word, but maintenance is often the key. So maintenance of an oil well is the key to ensuring it produces the profit you want throughout its life. And when you get to the end and you need to abandon it safely and securely with minimal impact to the environment and no risk of future impact, if you haven't maintained it, that becomes an incredibly expensive operation. So with much higher risk. So what we have to train ourselves to do is recognize that putting daily activity or monthly activity, whatever the correct frequency of maintenance is, that's the necessity to keep everything working smoothly. It's a principle of engineering any system. So I've just find it applies to your business too. So whatever you need to invest in your business, don't do it all in one lump. I recommend planning when those investments are going to come and putting the maintenance into your business you need, whether that's updating your website once a year, whether it's doing some type of annual promotion that draws in new clients. Well, it might be maintaining your equipment. Maybe you have equipment. You wouldn't let your equipment sit and not be maintained. And so that just maintenance is important. And so you look at how to work with your, but you have a fixed budget. You know, Brian, you know, you work with profit coach and people making sure they get profit. So you do need to look at everything and do it in a way that doesn't jeopardize the life cycle of your own business. Like, don't break your business doing that. But surprises are the ones that can break your business too. So the more maintenance you do, the more regularly you do the tune-up on your business, the better things will work.
What kind of maintenance have you been working through with some of the people you've worked with?
Well, I guess maybe it might be easier to talk about real estate business where I own rental properties, right? So it's always an interesting dilemma when you have a rental property, you have the tenants could be in there maybe 3-5 years and they come out and part of you just wants to put it right back into the market and get that money out again, right? But generally after 3-5 years, you need to go back in. You need to check through everything. You need to make sure everything's in good shape. Look at all the appliances, how much paint needs to be touched up. How old is the carpet? A lot of people have a house. You probably understand carpet wears out. So you just go back in and look at all of that. And what I find is when you do that regularly, you're not going to have to spend so much money all at once when all of a sudden your tenants move out. You can plan for this. So you go in and every time the tenants move out, maybe you go in and you do a walkthrough. And you plan, okay, these houses are going to need carpet every 5-8 years. That's in your forecast, where you're going to need that money to come from. So I think planning major, and this definitely comes from working for ExxonMobil. When am I going to have to make a major investment? How many years out is that? What do I want to do before that? And then I recommend, having an engineering background, I call it planned shutdown. When you reach that planned shutdown and nobody's in the apartment or the townhouse, whatever you're renting, do everything you can then and do it as close together as you can, because that time when you're shut down, you're not making any money, but you get it all done. You put it back on the market. You shouldn't have to deal with any emergencies now. You shouldn't get any surprise investments. So I try to run my rental properties in that same way. So I try to do a planned shutdown and I come in and I do as much as I can to get it in shape. So I am an engineer through and through. My grandfathers were mechanical guys. My dad is an engineer, and I'm definitely an engineer in a mindset. So, but it applies to life too. I talk a little bit about, sometimes I'll get nervous about talking about it, but when I got hurt, I gained a lot of weight and I've lost over 50 pounds. And that is about maintenance. That is about a daily commitment to the plan. and sticking with it. But as you know, the weight comes off, it gets easier to see that the results are coming and it's easier to commit to that. So a lot of people, just to get past that initial momentum of like, I'm not making any progress, you have to take a couple steps and then look back and say, oh, I really did make some progress. And then you'll get that momentum to go forward. It is a shift. It's a mindset shift.
You're fascinating. Like, you, with your background and your experience, it's almost not fair to other real estate investors or coaches, because like, you're just on a different level. You're so smart. And it's just so fascinating to me, how long the dog, 20 minutes, like, yeah. Your level of preparation and planning is inspiring. And just talking to you makes me feel more calm.
Cool. A lot of people say that about working with me. When they're really nervous about something, I just bring them a calm and a consistency, and we just push through.
That's fascinating. And then how did you get hooked up with, was it Business Made Simple or was the?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, Business Made Simple.
I don't know. Fluke? I don't know. My lawyer who does the contracts for my real estate company, it was certified as a Business Made Simple coach. She found that certification really benefited her, even though she's an attorney, she found it really benefited her employees, many of which were small business owners, to have a little bit of a background in business. And so she's like, you are exactly what they're looking for, and you will love the products they have to offer. And so I went and read Donald Miller's book, Blue Like Jazz, and read another couple of books by him just to see if I was sort of in the same mindset as him. Found out he's actually grew up in Houston. So I was like, hey, he's like a native. He's like my neighbor, you know, at one point. And so I went ahead and took a chance. But I will say, call it a chance, but I did my research, right? Because that's sort of who I am. I said, is he aligned with what I want to do? I talked to several people who had become coaches through the program, and I just slowly pivoted to the point where I was ready. And I did, it took me about 3 months to sign up because I was still recovering from this injury and I wanted to be really fully present and fully ready physically to do it. So that's how I coach people. You want to be ready to make the change, and however long it takes to prepare is okay. Everybody's different and everybody's situation different and change is different, but we could personalize it and help you make the change, and it'll feel good when it happens.
Yeah, I think it's like a perfect fit for you with the Donald Miller and the Business Made Simple stuff. And I'm not like even a midline user like Brian or you guys, and you guys are like super users and understanding of it. But my experience with Donald Miller and Business Made Simple is like, they're not fascinated, but they're big on frameworks, which I think would be perfect for you. And they're also like hyper-focused on intentionality. Is that a word?
Yeah.
I love that word. Yes, I talk a lot about intentionally living life or having intentionality.
Yeah, I think there's a few things I want to talk about. The first one is just the idea of patience. So that intentionality, it took you a while to, you know, be fully ready to go. And for some people, I think, need to be comfortable with that. So sometimes it takes us a while to, you know, build our business, to launch something, to hit go on our marketing. And I think some people beat themselves up over thinking they should go faster or harder. But, you know, sometimes we need to, you know, get ready for that pivot. And then, yeah, when it's time to go and we know what we're doing, you know, we invest in marketing and we were whatever, and we go a bit hard. But, you know, tell me about, you know, sort of patience and, you know, how that should pay off for people.
So that's a great way to ask it. And I'm trying to think about the best story to share, but I guess I coach a photographer who runs a photography studio, and she's been slowly pivoting over the years from leaving her job to being in full-time in this business of photography. And it's been very interesting because, as you said, there's a mindset you have to reach to take the next step. So I'd been coaching her for a while when I said, I don't think you've raised your prices since before the pandemic. Have you done market research to understand if you're where everyone else is? I'm like, because everything I buy has gone up in price. Like, I go to work on a house that I'm going to flip to a rental, and I find out first one I put in, I just a simple one. I put in, okay, the house is going to need all new ceiling fans and light fixtures. And I put my estimate in. I went out, you know, to start buying them. Everything was about 30 to 40% higher than what my estimate was, which was beyond my contingency. Because yes, as the geeky engineer that I am, my plan had a contingency, but that was more than the contingency for those items. And I said, wow, I sort of missed that everything's been going up in price, but it really convicted me. I should ask her, when's the last time she raised your prices? And it took a few, I would have to say months, for her to mentally prepare for that. And after you do it, there can be these moments of doubt too. Oh, are people not coming? Because so we just talked yesterday and she's like, I have people there asking about my prices. I'm like, well, do they know what your prices were before? She's like, no, but they're asking if this is really the price and if there's a discount. And I said, well, there's a seasonality to business. It's January. What happens in January is everybody overspent on the holidays. So everybody's thinking about money in January. We're also in the US, at least, I don't know if it's true in Canada, but we see like our tax bill on the horizon. Maybe we're paying our property taxes. We see our income tax. I said, the first quarter of the year, people are real nervous about money, but especially January, because you just got your credit card bill and you realize you probably did more than you should have. It wasn't very strategic. Your December was more about fun and less about strategy, which is okay. I think there should be time in our lives for that too. But I said, I think that's the only reason they're asking. It was for a wedding. I said, it's not like you did a previous wedding for this person, right? So it's not like they paid a certain number last time and now they're remarrying. And she's like, no, brand new client. I said, I think just let it be and trust yourself. Have a little patience. I said, in 4 weeks from now, if everyone you've talked to has said no, and your conversion from consultation to commitment has gone down, then we need to look at whether your prices are too high. But you did your market research and you need to trust that market research that you're in the right place within your industry for your pricing. I said, I think it's just a January effect. And so that's that kind of patience. And sometimes you need to find that insight from reading what's going on in business, talking to somebody else who's maybe talking to Brian, are these profit margins the right kind of profit margins, or what am I missing here? Maybe you talk, am I putting the right amount into marketing? But sometimes you need an expert. Sometimes you can find the information yourself, but you do need to be patient. When you make a change, things don't come off. It's not going to be immediate. So you do need to be patient with those changes. But as you said, the preparation and intentionality is really important, because if you try to flip on something before you're ready, you may not actually achieve it. And then you're going to be frustrated, disappointed. Maybe you've taken on too much risk in one step.
Yeah, that's awesome. The other thing we're going to strategically pivot back is we always turn these podcasts into a marketing podcast. And I want to talk again about maintenance, because I think, and removing surprises. I love that language of, avoiding surprises, because I think oftentimes people come and they want the golden ticket or they want the thing that works. And there really isn't a thing that works, but we can avoid big surprises that shouldn't be surprises. So things like that, patience, regular maintenance. I think marketing is one of those things. I know Matt, he talks about when people phone Matt, they're not always happy, right? They're like, they've wasted money on marketing that didn't work. They haven't done marketing. They're out of money. So they need an injection of, money, even though they don't have money to give them for marketing. But maybe, as I say that, if something's come up about just sort of like, how we get that maintenance mindset so that, we're not phoning Matt in January when our credit card bill comes in and right. Our sales are down and we're like, maybe I should have thought about marketing back in June when Matt told me I should have thought about marketing, so that we're sort of in that regular mode versus reacting to surprises all the time.
Well, I'll teach you another word that you might have fun with and you want to add to your lingo. It's called seasonalization. It's a nice long word, extra credit points for being super long. But I recommend in large corporations, you seasonalize your budget. You look at when the costs are going to come over the course of a year. Almost every business owner or even individual that I've worked with, there's a seasonality to their life. So there's a time when they have a lot of work and they're less able to spend time with their family. So they're making more progress on work goals and less progress on family goals. Or there's a time when a lot of money is going out the door, the end of the year, a lot of money is going out the door. But the, and maybe there's a time when they have big payments each year. So you'll get the seasonality of when your money flow is happening. If you're a small business owner, there's probably a seasonality to your client base. There's a time when they think about certain things. So I work with another coach who works with Christian camps, and he tries to target contacts with his clients that are seasonal. So he knows, like, in April and May, they're really thinking about hiring. So he needs to target, that's when we focus on hiring. And then he said, but the time, and here's the seasonalization that falls down on you, you need to do all the maintenance on your facility when there's nobody at your summer camp. So how do you plan to make sure that all of that is happening, that you've got staff, you've got equipment, everything is in place to do that seasonalization? So as a business owner, what is the season? If you're from a marketing perspective, when are people sort of primed to think I need this product? So like if you're trying to sell something really expensive, January is nobody wants to spend money. Like I just said, January, everybody's sort of freaked out. So they're not ready to spend money in January. Everybody's trying to recover from, and maybe right around tax season isn't a good time. But there are probably times when your clients are thinking, gosh, I'm really ready for, you know, new blinds in my house and new window coverings. Or how do you tap into that? So my friend that does wedding photography, so right after Christmas, a lot of people get engaged. So she really tries to promote that she does weddings in the months after Christmas, although it's the time when everybody's afraid of the price of everything. But it's a time to really promote that you're a wedding photographer because people are choosing wedding photographers after they get engaged. So you may think about what the seasonality is of your business and have an annualized targeted marketing plan that leverages those seasons.
It's so fascinating. And it's like, I speak about it all the time to clients and people that I would like to work with. So it's nice to hear it from somebody else because I'm sometimes preaching to my own choir. And I love to hear, again, like be a part of these conversations. I also think with people when they say like, okay, I know this wedding photographer around Christmas time is when people are going to start looking or being a bit more active. I always think too, being intentional about the lead up to those thoughts also, meaning just because this is a Donald Miller line, I'm pretty sure, because I'm stealing it from Brian, who I'm pretty sure stole it from Donald Miller, which is just because we're ready to sell something doesn't mean people are ready to buy from us. So I always like to say, like, we need to get that marketing out, like maybe even 30 days before Christmas, or maybe it's 60 or 90. We need to figure that out. And I don't think people are always the most intentional with that. Like Brian is trying to get at too, where marketing for whatever reason seems to be so reactive. It's the first thing to go when things are not good, which makes no sense. And it's usually the last thing people spend money on as well. They kind of expect this magic bullet of, okay, I'm going to turn something on. I'm going to reach out to my marketer. He's going to turn something on tomorrow, and then I'm going to get a sale 2 days later. And it's unfortunately not like that. So I think actually, because I've had so many conversations like this, this is why I'm so interested in chatting with you, because you understand the intentionality of all of this stuff of, okay, if we need to get to this like point B, what are the points that we hit along the way?
Right. So because I have a strong background in like business planning and analysis, in addition to seasonalizing when your expected major investments are coming, your outflow of cash, you need to be tracking sort of your inflow of cash. And if you do project-based work, you should sort of know when you're going to run out of projects. I was working with a painting company and they were saying they didn't have a lot of projects in the pipeline. But as you said, they probably need to be thinking about that 30 to 60 days before they're going to run out of projects. Because if you wait till you run out of projects and like, okay, now I'm going to go over and try to promote and grab a few more projects, you won't get those projects going for another I don't know, 2 to 4 weeks, maybe. Maybe you can get them up and running in a week, but you end up, as you said, sort of reactionary. Have a project, go find a customer. Have a project, go find a customer. We want to have a pipeline of clients coming in, a pipeline of projects. And again, you're trying to reach a sort of a more even, steady state rather than a transient situation where you've got a lot of work and then you've got no work and a lot of work and no work. So how do you create marketing to support it? How do you create regular engagement with customers so that you can get repeat clients for certain types of things? What's the frequency that they're going to need your product again so that you've caught them some amount in advance, so they're thinking about your product over someone else's? And you've just got to keep feeding that pipeline. But if you're not looking out into the future and you don't see when the jobs run out, then you're going to hit that point again where you're like, oh, now I don't have any cash flow for 3 weeks. I'm going to go run and do some marketing and customer engagement. So I think of that sort of as maintenance. And I guess most people probably don't think of marketing as maintenance, but that is actually how you maintain your customers, how you maintain that flow of cash.
I hate that when someone reaches out and they're already to the point where they're like, I don't have anything on the horizon, or I have no job starting next week and I need you to come in and be the superhero. And I'm like, it's going to be weeks before I put anything out there, let alone get you a sale. Like, it's just fascinating when we're on the other end and like we understand the intentionality of it and how crazy it is.
Yeah, I was talking about well work earlier. So coming in and doing maintenance on wells. What's interesting about that, because I've worked in multiple countries overseas, is that as an oil company, you have partners that are other oil companies and you have partners that are government entities. And you need to know ahead of time all the requirements to go forward with the project. Whose approval do you need? Do they need to approve the contractors? Do they need to approve the budget? Do they need to approve both? And how long is it going to take to get their approval? So the most common place that I would find mentoring young engineers working overseas was that they thought everything could happen so quick. And it might take 1 to 2 years to get all the pieces in place to execute a well work job. So if you have to start planning for that up front, you need to recognize all the things. And with experience, we as business owners should start to see what those patterns are. We need to accept that is the pattern, that it takes 2 to 4 weeks to get another painting job going, or it takes, 3 months to get a permit to work up to renovate a home. Like, I need to put that in my time budget and my expected cash flow on a project. How long is it going to take me to get the permits to go work on a house? So it's about planning. I love planning. I help people that don't love to plan. I help them plan. It doesn't have to be as big as what I did for ExxonMobil. It's scaled to what you actually do, but you have to plan if you want that constant cash flow, feel like you have a stable business that supports your family so you can have that peace of mind. You have to start planning.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Before we wrap up here, let's talk a little bit about, I have many sort of quotes that stick in my mind from our various conversations. And, one of them's talking about joy in the journey. And I think a lot of times people get caught up in thinking that's something that's over the horizon. They're mad at themselves for, not doing marketing today, or like all the things that are going wrong. And they're sort of daydreaming about this future state of their business that may or may not happen. But, give us some tips on how we experience that joy in the journey sort of every day.
Well, it comes from, for me, funny enough, it comes from having process. Matt mentioned going back and looking at this whole giant list of things he wanted to get done and then finding out, well, he'd actually done many of them, 3/4 of them, he said. So if you document what you plan to do and then you look back and see that you did it, you're going to figure out how to actually see your progress. But if you keep moving forward, sort of abstractly and without too much written down, you'll never really know if you're moving towards it or not. And you won't be able to look back and see that it's actually happening. But the joy part for me was really listening to myself. What do I love to do? What makes me really happy at the end of the day? Where do I feel that fulfillment? And it's not as simple as this versus that. So I still want to make money. I still want a certain amount of money coming in. So it's not like you, everybody just gets to throw up their hands and say, I'm just going to do exactly what I want to do. I'm going to go be a ski bunny for the rest of my life, which I thought about because I love to downhill ski, but there's not a lot of money in that. So I looked into maybe being like a ski instructor, but anyway, that may still come. That's sort of on my maybe list. You need to figure out what you like. So when I work with someone who thinks they want to leave corporate America, which is a common theme, I really ask them, what do you love about what you're doing? It turns out there's usually a list. Maybe they love the stability, the benefits, the pay, the people. And then we get down to, okay, what parts of your job do you really, really like? The ones where the time just slips away and you realize 3 hours later, you didn't even know time passed, but you've been working on a certain thing. Some people find that they really love, maybe it's mentoring. They love bringing the next generation forward. That was part of it for me. So realizing the favorite part of my job was actually a small part of my job made me say, how would I make that a bigger part of what I do day to day? If you really understand what you love, then you will be able to create more of that. If you, and here's one thing that Brian knows about me, I don't like marketing. Like, I'm really afraid of marketing. So don't do what you don't love. Hire someone, the right someone, to do what you don't love, because probably they're way better at it. They have tons of experience and they're going to help market you in the way that you feel comfortable, that brings the results you want. But you know, think about what you can delegate. I'm a huge believer in delegation. If there's things that drain your energy, they just empty your tank doing them. Is there any way you can delegate that to someone else? I had a client who, like, the laundry and the house cleaning, every time we talked, it just drug her down. And I said, what do you think it would cost to pay someone to do that for you? So she looked into it. I said, okay, now what do you have to give up to get that to happen? And she found a couple of things she could give up on. You know, like, we have too many subscriptions, Hulu, Netflix, you know, we got like 12 subscriptions. So you drop a couple of those, you might be able to afford a housekeeper. So she did this rebalancing and it really freed her mind to creativity and space. So sometimes those solutions are actually there. We can't see them. Working with someone else may help you find those solutions. But like I said, marketing for me, it's the reason I know these guys, wasn't a thing I really wanted to do for myself. So think about who your experts are, because the things you don't love will suck your energy away and you need to make more of your day beyond the things you really love to do.
Awesome. We're getting close to wrapping up, but final thought, tell us what your vision is for when you're 80, because I love it.
Okay. Well, there's a couple things when I'm 80, but you know, my back injury actually occurred downhill skiing about 5 years ago. And it is my goal to still be skiing when I'm 80, talking on the chairlift to all the kids and encouraging everybody to hang on to whatever they love, because I experienced just true joy sliding down the mountain. So that is one of my goals. And what that does for me, having that in my head, every day I wake up and say, what do I need to do to maintain my body so that it is skiing at 80 years old? It keeps me on my fitness goals, my food goals, my sleep goals, all of those things are in mind. I also often think when I'm 80 that I'll still be married to the love of my life, that I married when I was 21. So we'll be getting close to 60 years when I'm 80. And we have some cool plans of things we have visited. We set a goal to visit as many countries as we were old. So when I was 40, I had hit 40 countries. And I'm telling you, they're getting harder because I'm up in the mid-40s now and it's getting harder to pick countries, but we want to continue that. So by the time I'm 80, I'll have visited 80 countries and experienced 80 different cultures. So there's a lot of things that I want to do, and I'll be living comfortably, financially, able to give to all the charities that I care about. I have a legacy in my trust to ensure that the children of my godchildren go to college and are able to get access to what they want in their lives. So I think those are all things, and I've written them down, and check in with me in 40 plus years or 30 plus years. I'll let you know if I did it.
We have to have her back in 40 plus years on the podcast.
Yeah. That's- All right. This has been awesome. I am going to market you briefly. You can, find Strategic Pivots at strategicpivots.com. And there's going to be some great stuff being launched soon that I think people are going to love. And Yeah, that will be great. Thank you for listening. Hope you love this conversation. If you would like to be on the podcast, you can reach us at setitup@coorthasmallbusinesspodcast.ca.